Future of Finance podcast, where finance finds its future.
Hello, I'm Dominic Hobson, co-founder of Future of Finance. My guest today is Gilbert Verdian, CEO of Quant, a business dedicated to making blockchains work for banks, for asset managers, for insurers, and for technology vendors by ensuring that blockchain protocols and traditional systems can interoperate successfully. Our topic today is how to accelerate our progress towards large and liquid digital asset markets. Gilbert, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dominic. It's great to be here.
The third area I'd like to discuss with you as an obstacle to rapid progress towards large and liquid digital asset markets is interoperability. And this is the one obstacle to the growth of the digital asset markets that almost everybody seems to be able to agree on. It's just simply too difficult to port your assets seamlessly between blockchains, let alone between blockchains and traditional finance networks. We are starting to see fixes to that solution. You have one yourself called in your own business called Overledger. You've got competitors also putting forward solutions of their own. But I know this is your specialist subject. You advertise yourselves as champions of interoperability, and I just wonder what it means to you. Why is interoperability so important, and how do you see the problem being solved over time?
So we've pioneered interoperability very early on, and we saw the challenge that everyone will face. 2000 and I think it was around 10 when things were evolving, and you could see that we're heading in the wrong direction, and we needed to make that right. So from our perspective, we were quite early to recognize the problem and quite early to start finding the solution, and that's what we did with our technology and our platform with Overledger, and that was something that we had since 2017. So it's been quite early. The need for interoperability is really business driven. It's market access, and what you don't want to do is, we're evolving a financial system to a digital finance system. It's transformational. It occurs every few decades. It is quite foundational, and what you don't want to do is to get that wrong, and having fragmentation, having assets and jurisdictions only operate in silos, having the lack of interconnectivity and interoperability severely limits the market. And it's not just a technical solution. It's a business solution to give access to different types of instruments in different types of jurisdictions issued by different types of issuers, and allowing those new asset classes to freely transact and trade on global systems. And having that in the right technology, which is where interoperability comes in, gives you that ability to have that seamless experience, and gives you that ability to differentiate to what we've already got today. There's no point creating another financial system that's a mirror of what we can do today. No one will use it. It's like, why do we need to change? Because we've already got everything that works. So having interoperability is an enabler that can allow new instruments such as tokenized equities, securities, funds, etc., to settle with tokenized bank deposits or central bank digital currencies, but work across any jurisdiction, on any system, on any network. And that's very different to today, because there's no way you can do that easily today. And no amount of regulation or investment in technology can solve the existing system, can update the existing system to be able to do that. So it really makes sense for us to build this new financial system with interoperability at its core, which allows it to differentiate to what we've got today. And it makes the whole system grander and larger and more exciting, because all of a sudden it's back to market access. You've got access to new types of assets, new types of instruments, and new jurisdictions that you can transact globally.
At the moment, we have competing solutions to the interoperability question. Is that a good thing? Do we need a sort of TCP/IP solution, something that everybody agrees on to facilitate interoperability? And if you were looking to drive market participants towards that sort of single answer, would it be helpful if central banks, supranational banks, financial market infrastructures like central counterparties, payments market infrastructures, central securities depositories adopted a single standard? I think history shows the sort of mixed results from that. If you look at adoption of ISO 20022, for example, you've got not everybody's going down that path, even in the payments industry. So these things are difficult to make it work, but can you get the critical mass of industry to adopt a single solution? And what part can regulators and state institutions play in encouraging that, if that's what we want? Or do we want continuing competition between interoperability solutions?
I think what we need is not a fragmented approach by implementing proprietary solutions, proprietary languages, proprietary protocols that will work in a very small segment of the market and that will serve that market. But at its core, it's not very easy to then integrate that into anything else. We're seeing consortiums being stood up, and that's great. It works only if you're part of that consortium, but what if you're not? What about the rest of the market? The right way to solve this is through mainstream adoption by standards. So having common standards where it is accepted that it will work for that jurisdiction or for that implementation or for that FMI, for example, it really allows participants to enter and integrate into that FMI, financial market infrastructure. But it also allows that FMI to work with other FMIs in different jurisdictions. So having a kind of a global approach rather than looking at something in silos in small jurisdictions. We don't want to create an ocean of islands. We want to be able to all transact globally and have our financial systems interoperate. The best way we've seen is what co-designing and co-building as an industry, and it doesn't make sense for a single bank or a single jurisdiction or a single technology to be adopted in silo. It makes sense for a uniform approach to this, where groups of consortia or groups of industry participants get together and they help co-design and co-build with a private-public approach on what the infrastructure is going to look like. And that way it's mainstream from the outset, because it's all done with all the participants in mind, and they all have a seat at the table, and they all have a say in terms of how this should work within either that jurisdiction, within that FMI, or within a uniform approach to connect to other FMIs or to other infrastructures. We're seeing a lot of activity in that space. What we want is that interconnected and interoperable approach from the outset, because then that way we'll have that connected world, the digital finance system that will allow, multi-jurisdictional transactions across common rails that can work across different participants. So we're seeing that being implemented as we speak, but it's very encouraging to see more of that and the industry get that, and they are doing that. They don't want to make the mistakes of the past and create something that may be good for today, but it won't last for the next 30 years, and changing something that's already been implemented in the future is costly and very prohibitive. So they don't want to do those implementations of what we used to have in 20, 30 years ago in previous systems.
You've been very clear that there's no point in reproducing the existing system with all its silos and islands of activity. And this may be a stupid question, but do you ever worry that by providing these interconnectors between the different presently siloed systems, whether they're blockchain-based or traditional systems, does that inadvertently achieve the opposite of what's intended, that actually it enables systems which have outlived their usefulness, shall we say, to continue to exist longer than they should? In other words, they can, interoperability rescues them from their own obsolescence. Is that a stupid question or not?
I think, you know, with any technology, it evolves based on business need. So yes, we've seen different systems that have been running for 30 years and they're still running and they might continue to run for another 30 years. But those systems have been so critical because they're deemed national infrastructure, that they're so critical to a process. It could be pre-trade, trade, post-trade. It's very difficult to replace those. So, you know, they will have their place and they will be integrated into whatever else we're building in terms of infrastructure. But eventually what will happen is that they will reach a point where it's too costly to reinvest into that system or to run that system. And then we'll see examples of coexistence happening where, you know, that similar functionality can be done on a new modern system, on a different technology stack that is more future-proof. And then you'll see that evolution and the transition of volumes from the legacy to the new, and eventually the legacy can be decommissioned and retired. So we are seeing that evolution. It is quite natural in technology for that sequence to occur. But they have their place. I mean, we cannot turn off all our existing systems because we're thinking of designing a new one. They have their place and they have their need, and they will continue to operate as they do.
One final question on interoperability, and it's this. There's been a lot of interest recently in solving the interoperability problem by building a new infrastructure referred to as a unified ledger or a single programmable platform. And it's been put forward in different ways by the Bank for International Settlements, by the International Monetary Fund, and it originated even with the private sector initiative, the Regulated Liability Network. Do you see that as a good idea, an obvious way forward?
I do, and having you know, a lot of experience in banking and payments as well, what we see occurring is that there will be a common inter-jurisdictional settlement network. And that needs to happen as an overlay to the different systems that are being developed. So what will happen is each jurisdiction will either create their own or plug into a nearby settlements network that is being developed. And it could be sovereign, it could be regional, it could be by institution. I mean, one bank might have their own, for example. So what will happen is you plug into your nearest connection based on your need. You either you know, do it yourself, you work with your peers and you co-build and co-design what that looks like, or if there's one that's existing, you know, the way we've got it today in payments, you could connect to an agency bank and they onboard you to the network. So we're going to see that same approach and the same adoption that's going to happen bottom up in terms of domestic jurisdiction connectivity, then up to regional. And then from the regional, you'll have that common layer between the different regions, which is where that settlement network comes in. And yes, there's opportunities to explore Enbridge, RLN, and others. And it makes sense for banks to do that because they all have a say, that they have the experience and the connectivity of past networks to bring to these new types of networks. And it gives them a common way to interoperate without forcing something proprietary. And it gives them the ability to do it themselves, work with peers, or just connect, outsource that to a provider that you trust and get them to connect you to your nearest regional connection. So we're going to see that occur, but what happens in terms of which one will work, it's to be determined we don't know, but the industry will decide eventually, because it will be done as a private-public initiative, but it also is driven by all the institutions working as peers in co-designing and co-developing this.